Welcome to the Frontline Industry Podcast. Every week, we talk with top senior executives to get their advice on positively impacting frontline employees, companies, and customers. On today's episode, The Power of Human Truth, I talk with Daryl Travis, founder and CEO at Brand Trust, a brand consultancy offering a more human way to build brands and create meaningful change. Daryl explains why humans don't really know what they want and how that influences buying behavior and employee experience. Why we all tend to keep our Apple device packaging stuffed in drawers. Creating brands versus creating bonds and much more. Don't go anywhere. The Frontline Industry Podcast starts right now. Welcome to the Frontline Industry Podcast. My name is Joel. I'm joined today with Daryl Travis. He's the founder and CEO of Brand Trust, where he leads a team of highly regarded researchers, strategists, and behavior designers. They are privileged to advise many of the leading brands in the world where they're relied on to help those customers solve brand, customer experience, and innovation challenges. He has some books that you may have heard of. If you haven't, I suggest you take a look at them. They are called, his latest ones, How Does It Make You Feel?, Why Emotion Wins the Battle of Brands, and Little Things, Big Returns, How to Deliver Experiences That Matter Most to Your Customers. And both of those books share details about their unique approach to revealing the human truth behind business challenges. I can't wait to dive into this, Daryl, with you. Welcome to the podcast. It's good to see you again.
My pleasure. Good to see you. Thanks for inviting me to join you today.
Well, it's an honor and a privilege, and I would love to just turn it over to you. For those who hear the introduction and think, what is a behavior designer? Talk to us more about what you do at Brand Trust.
Yeah, we're a research and strategy firm. We live at, we like to describe that we live at the intersection of marketing and social and behavioral science. And that's because, a customer is at the center of everything that you do as a business. And so understanding those customers might be the most important thing you ever did, maybe next to understanding your employees. Mm. And so we love to say business challenges are human challenges. And what we do is really, for the most part, consumer psychology and consumer behavior is really understanding customers at a deeper level. What we know now from really a substantial body of science is that we think we're thinking through everything, but actually we're feeling our way through life, and that so many of our beliefs and behaviors are driven by non-conscious motivations. So we don't always know exactly why we do what we do, or we certainly don't know it consciously. Mm. And so the reason we specialize in social and behavioral science is to understand the kinds of things that customers and employees, for that matter, either can't or won't tell us because they might not be fully aware of it themselves. So it's not really that deeper understanding of why people do what they do.
I like that you bring that up, that kind of intrinsic, internal, maybe even subconscious thought process that we as humans just put into the way we live our lives. I look at a lot of the ways companies perhaps approach their customers or even their employees, as you mentioned it. And a lot of times there's a lot of just giving people what they want as far as what they say they want. And reality, right, they aren't actually meeting the real need because they aren't actually getting to that deeper level. And it sounds like that's all you do is think about that deeper level. And one example, maybe this resonates with you, Daryl, is I think about the fact that if you survey a bunch of employees, everyone would say, yeah, I want higher pay. Yeah, I want better benefits. And yet there's such a subconscious, unmet desire for deep relationships and meaning and purpose and authentic connection and things like that, that they would never even voice because one, maybe they haven't even heard of that being available to them, or two, they haven't even realized they have that need. Is that the kind of thing that you're talking about?
Oh, exactly. That's exactly the kind of thing we're talking about. And you realize that most of the data says that people leave a business because of their manager. They don't leave because they didn't get a raise. They leave because they didn't have a relationship and they weren't receiving the kind of recognition and rewards that you described. You know, that need to feel like you're making a difference and that you that your work is contributing to your identity and you're proud of your work. And when you go to a cocktail party or a barbecue, you can't wait to tell people where you work and what you do, that kind of thing. Mm. So, yeah, it's all about what we would call irrational behavior. And that's actually where the whole science of behavioral economics really emerged, is the idea that, I don't know about you, but I got a I did well in school, but I got a D in economics because it didn't make sense to me. And then it turns out in some sense I was right, because a lot of the sort of traditional economics was really about rational behavior of consumers, and you know, behavioral economics really emerged from Richard Thaler and Daniel Kahneman's work and others to help us understand like the irrationality of markets, right? We think we always buy the cheapest product, right? Because we're rational. We're thinking everything through. We always and we always eat the proper diet, and we always exercise the right appropriate number of times every week. We always have the right amount of money in the bank for a rainy day or retirement and college funds. You know, raise your hand if all those things are true, and none of those things are true for most of us. So we're not the rational beings we think we are, and we're not thinking our way through life. We're feeling our way through life.
So talk to me about how that research has manifested itself in some surprising ways for you or perhaps your clients. So what are some aha moments that were just like, wow, we did not see that coming?
Well, the big thing, I think the big thing that keep in mind is that think about every year there's like, you know, close to 20,000 new products fail every year. Those products were researched, right? They were studied. People were asked if they would buy those products. And then many companies fail, or many brands fail as well. And those are also researched, but there's a say-do gap. You know, people, if we ask people really direct questions, you know, would you buy this product? They think that the right answer is, yeah, probably. I probably would buy it, because they don't actually know that they may have some barrier, some obstacle, some resistance to why they might want that product or need that product. And so those are the kinds of things that we study. We also study really the deeper motivation. So what's really driving a customer? So if I give you an example, we do a lot of healthcare work, and we know that clinicians in particular, doctors and nurses and respiratory therapists, people like that who actually treat patients first line, they have this, as human beings, they have these personality traits, these sort of deep-seated motivations to what we describe as eliminating chaos and restoring order. So that's our sort of behavioral science description of it. That no one ever says that. A physician or a nurse never says that to us. But in their stories, when we ask them their stories about what a day is like, when they're most rewarded, when they feel most gratified, the kinds of stories that they share with their friends and family, it's the kind of thing where they are eliminating chaos and restoring order. So think about it now. Why do you become a clinician? You become a clinician because you have this deep and abiding need to restore human beings from illness and injury. That's eliminating chaos and restoring order. And so we know that if you want to create a product or a brand that comes into alignment with what they're trying to do, those are the kinds of things that you need to talk about. But we also know that you can't be overt about it. You can't say that's what it's about, that we're here to eliminate chaos and restore order. So you have to demonstrate to them that you are coming alongside them to help them in the tonality, in the persona, in the imagery, in the way that the product presents itself, and the way the brand behaves in sort of everyday life. And so it's that kind of stuff that it's subtle. These are not questions that they can answer because they're not aware. They're not fully aware of this is why they became clinicians. This is why they believe what they believe and why they behave the way they do.
So I think there may be some people listening going, what you're saying makes sense. And maybe I had a level of awareness that this reality is out there, that what I think I want isn't really what I want, or my ability to verbalize what I want doesn't match my actions. However, I'd love to have you share just your perspective on how many businesses in your experience, just percentage-wise, are thinking about their customers or employees in the way that you would suggest they think about them. Is it like any? I mean, is there a reason you're out there? Like, someone needs to address this epidemic? Or are there a lot of businesses out there that are doing it the right way and you're helping the remainder? How does that work?
Well, it's a fabulous question, Joel. I'll tell you, what's interesting about it too is that if you, there are surveys, if you poll businesses, do they think they're thinking about it from their customer's perspective? About 80% of them say yes, they are. They really want to be customer-centered. But then when you ask their customers, it's more like 20% say, the customers would say that they that the business or the brand is customer-centered. So there's this enormous gulf between what businesses think they're doing and what customers believe they're doing. And the truth of it is, the customer's experience, the customer's perception is the only one that matters, right? Mm-hmm. 'Cause you think of it, the brand actually lives in the customer's mind. That's the only place where the brand comes to life. And so the brand either delivers what the customer wants and needs and desires, or it doesn't.
So for me, when I think of, and maybe as the expert here on the line, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but as I think of a business that epitomizes perhaps, at least in many times across its legacy and history, what you're talking about of thinking about the right way, Apple comes to mind. Bringing up products that the customer wasn't even asking for, didn't even know to ask for, innovating in ways that, others hadn't even gone there yet and thought about those solutions. You know, Henry Ford, if I'd given people what they want, I would have found given them a faster horse, that kind of thing, right? What brands do you think are doing it well? Maybe they're your customers, and that's maybe an unfair question to ask, but what are some great brands out there that our listeners would maybe know about and think that way?
Well, the brands that are most successful are the ones that are generally doing it well. But Apple is really the very best example. If you think about it, here's the largest, most successful business in history, but it's a very commoditized product, right? I mean, all the other technology brands out there, they all do pretty much the same thing. But Apple understood, and I think this is, you know, Steve Jobs had a lot of pros and cons about the way he approached life and business, but he did understand this aspect, and that is that it's really not about the feeds and speeds and the bits and bytes and the technology. It's really about how you make customers feel. And he started from the outset, he started with the idea of democratizing technology, so that, you know, everybody could use it and everybody would be enabled to use it. And when you look at their products, the, you know, the elegant, simplistic design, you think, oh, well, they're just genius product designers. And they are, for the most part. But they also have many products that have failed through history, that they, you know, they had design flaws. But ultimately, what it's about is not the design itself or design for the sake of design. It's about giving the customer the feeling that this is simple and this is going to work well. Right. That's what it's really all about. And one of the things that we study when we study brands is a behavioral economics principle called peak end rule. And that's, rather than looking at all the customer touch points, we look at what we call the peak moments in the customer experience. And all the great brands that we work on, they'll come down to a handful of moments that are actually creating that sense of alignment with the customer's deeper needs. Apple was so good because of that sense of democratizing technology. A great, great example is the packaging, the Apple packaging, right? They realized that you have bought something, you spent a lot of money for it, and ultimately you're going to end up home alone with it, and you're going to take it out of that box, and you're going to try to turn it on, and in the back of your mind is like, this is not going to work, and I'm going to feel stupid, and I'm going to have to get my 12-year-old nephew to help me figure out how to turn it on. And all these kinds of things, because that's sort of our history with technology. So Apple designs this really beautiful, elegant packaging that's, you know, you open it, it's 1, 2, 3, turn it on, and it goes, and it works, and you're happy, and you're fulfilled, and mm-hmm. everything works out. So then I often make speeches about this to large groups of people, and I will say to them, just think about the irrationality of this for a moment, and think about the power of this brand and what this brand, how this brand has aligned with customer motivation so perfectly. So how many of you keep your Apple packaging? And it'll be 75 or 80% of the hands in the room will shoot up. And you think about it, do you save your packaging for any other product that you buy? Save maybe Tiffany, you know, a Tiffany ring in that beautiful blue box. What else do you, that's, folks, that's irrational behavior, but that's because they have discovered this peak moment, and they have come alongside it and answered the need in the moment better than any brand out there. And I've had conversations with other technology manufacturers where they maybe even might make fun of Apple for spending so much money on their packaging. And I have to say, wait a minute. Let's talk about this. Let's understand what's happening in this moment and how that's one of those things that better brands understand in these moments with customers.
That's really, really insightful. I wonder, we just spent some time talking about products and packaging and marketing. How does your organization, your research, the way businesses should do things intersect with the way frontline associates need to treat customers? Or the way that you lead frontline associates to create the right culture for them to deliver on that brand promise?
Yeah, I think that's my favorite question these days, because what we're realizing now is we're not really creating brands, we're creating bonds, because the consumer has grown so much more sophisticated and is bombarded with so much messaging, so much advertising these days, that they've really become quite skeptical and even in many respects cynical about advertising. They're still affected by it, they're still influenced by it, but they're less, I think they're less receptive to it. And so what's happened is that a brand has to be so much more concerned with its behavior and so much more concerned with the experience that it delivers to customers, because it's a very holistic situation. So we really now more than ever are having to think about it in the sense that the purpose of the organization, why the organization exists, the values that underpin the organization, and the behavioral norms against those values, those create the brand and the customer experience. They grow out of the fertile soil of the culture of that organization. So it's a delicately, it's a sensitive and delicately balanced ecosystem. Hmm. And so if we don't think about it that way, then we lose the opportunity to optimize the experience for our people in the inside the organization and the customer. And so the people inside the organization, they have to believe. It has to be authentic. It has to be meaningful for them. It has to help them establish their identity. It has to help them, as we said earlier, want to tell people what they do, be you know, fulfilled and happy in the work that they do. And it's what creates the whole chemistry of creating that brand experience that's going to make a difference.
Is that harder in some ways because it's so people-centric, as far as you're not pouring this energy and thought into a product, you know, an inanimate object that once you've kind of figured out this thing, it doesn't change. But I think about the dynamics of a multi-generational workforce and trying to take your approach to identifying human need and irrational behavior to then stratify it across generations and cultures and the smorgasbord of different individuals that we'll have in our workforce from that speak different languages at different backgrounds, different ages. Is that just, it seems intrinsically harder to me. Is that accurate?
You know, I think it's a good question. That's kind of one of those examples of, you know, when you look at things through a more rational lens, yes, it seems like it's more difficult and more, and I'd say probably it is more complex. But in reality, the actual identification of what's motivating people and then the execution against it becomes simpler, because it's what we call the power of human truth. Because what we know is that as human beings, we have a very primary layer of very basic emotions. And then we have hundreds of what we might call social emotions that are layered on top of those. But those basic human emotions around trust and love and those kinds of emotions, they're pretty universal, and they run, you know, they will run the gamut across all age groups, all ethnic groups, all kinds of people are all the same. Essentially, trust is trust. It may be manifested a little bit differently in a Gen Z than it is in a boomer, but the reality is everybody wants to feel like they're in a trusted environment, that they're in a safe environment, that they can be respected and that they can, you know, have a voice and be connected to the organization. So all those kinds of things are pretty darn universal among human beings, and they are what we call human truths. And so if we tap into those, then it becomes actually easier, right? If the company establishes a good why, you know, a good why that's really clear and simple. This is why we exist. This is what we're trying to accomplish in the world. This is how we're trying to improve humankind in some way. And that might not, that doesn't necessarily mean you give a pair of socks away every time you sell a pair of socks or a pair of glasses every time you sell a pair of glasses, though I think those are, you know, noble endeavors. It's just clarity. You know, it could also just be, we want to be the easiest business to do business with, and here are all the things that we're doing to make sure that we're easy for our customers. But it's clarity, right? And then here are the values that uphold that clarity. And here are the behavioral norms that we identify and curate and respect and reward and recognize within our organization. These are the behaviors that uphold that and make that come true as we live out this purpose and promise in the world.
So as the expert in the room, as it were, I'd love to have you correct me or shed additional light or context to what I'm about to share with you. So for many years now, I have summarized for my customers, and they've been various sizes, SMB, mid-market, enterprise. I've summarized for them the things that go into creating a strong culture where employees want to be there, feel fulfilled, and they're delivering great results for the business. And of course, subsequently, increased engagement, increased tenure, things like that. And the five things, and there's kind of subcategories to them, but the five major buckets would be strong purpose, a safe environment, a vulnerable environment, a place where they can be autonomous and kind of own their job, and a place where it's barrier-free, where that there's a consistent, continuous improvement environment of reducing the barriers that stand in the way of them being successful. And that's usually spearheaded by a manager or those in charge. So it'd be purpose, safety, vulnerability, autonomy, and a barrier-free workplace. I would love to hear your thoughts on where you think I may have gotten it wrong or added context to what you think I'm missing. I think empathy was something that I probably should have put in there, but that may be revolving around vulnerability a bit too. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's a good list, actually. And I would definitely add empathy to it. I think part of the secret is to close the loop on those things. And that's one of the things where we sometimes lose track in marketing and in business in general, is that we sort of feel like if we put those things out there, that people will just naturally close the loop and finish the story. And what we have to do is like help people really understand what does behaving in this way, what do those values mean to you? What is that going to do to your identity? How is that going to elevate you somehow mm-hmm. and make you feel like you're making a contribution, right? So that's the big thing that's involved. One of the things that we, a social behavioral science discipline that we pay a lot of attention to, in fact, it's sort of the root of everything we do at Brand Trust, is called appreciative inquiry. Appreciative inquiry is really nothing more than asking the kinds of questions, mostly among associates, internal audiences, around when are we doing it right? What are your best days? What are your best moments, right? So what's the most appreciative story we can tell? The negative things, if you need to know negative things, they'll come out because they're stronger and you can't hold them in. They're going to come out. But we don't very often ask, when are we at our best? When are we doing things the way we always hoped we would be doing things and accomplishing the things we always hoped we would be accomplishing? And so even just the act of talking with employees or associates about those kinds of things will lift morale, right? So it's just feeling like I belong here, feeling like I'm respected and recognized for who I am as an individual. And because of that, I contribute to this greater why, this greater purpose that we're all trying to achieve. That's the secret. And then that's the loop that needs to be closed, right? So it's those values that you shared, those are definitely elements of it. But how do those things make all of that come true? How do those things make all of that possible?
What I'm hearing you say is those are good things, but there's two elements to it that are important. One is the so what.
Right.
So what does that mean for how I act or how I espouse these things in healthy ways? And then there's also a reaffirmation of those are good goals, but the process is just as important as the outcome. Yes, because having the conversation about these things is actually just as important as focusing on what we're trying to get to. But the act of having that conversation is actually getting you to the outcome you're trying to achieve.
Exactly. Yeah. Having the conversation and recognizing the behaviors, like catching associates in the right behaviors and recognizing them. Mm-hmm.
That's really good.
Yeah. As soon as you know that, then you know, as an individual, oh, this is where the rewards are. This is what I understand now. It makes it very clear to me what the expectations are. And I recognize the nobility or the purpose behind the expectations. So I'm happy to enlist. I'm happy to become part of this. I want to be a soldier in this battle.
So you said a word that I want to double down on for a second, because I'm curious as to your thoughts. Rewards. I told this story. Hold on, let me back up. I told this story, I don't know how many podcasts ago, probably 20 ago, but it's worth saying again. I was at one of the largest manufacturers in the world. I was working at one of their plants, doing some continuous improvement consulting and technology and implementations and things. And we walked in, and it's a huge plant, massive amounts of product pumped out of this place every day, a lot of staff. And they're having an immense turnover challenge, as most manufacturers do, but it was a tougher place to work, I would say, than others. And their incentive, the reward for sticking around for a stay bonus was, if you stay longer than X number of weeks, you get a free grill. Which to me didn't add up. Is that really motivating? I mean, maybe it is. Maybe I'm blind, but I don't feel like that's maybe the best reward system. But I share that story because, and I love that company a lot. I mean, I have friends that still work there. And if you're listening, I'm sorry. I didn't say the name of the company. But, you know, there are some misguided.
You know who you are, right? But yeah. You know who you are.
You know who you are. And then during the middle of our meeting, one of the decision makers had to leave and drive down the road to pick up peaches because they were bringing peaches back for the staff. I'm like, that's nice, a wonderful thing. But can we address some of the root causes here? But anyway, that said, going back to employees asking for things that they want that maybe aren't even the things they want most or need, what are the sort of rewards that work? You know, what are the things that when we start throwing rewards, and if you get enough points, you can buy a branded jacket. You know, if you have a great customer satisfaction score over the next 3 months, you're going to get a plaque. Like, those are things I've won in my past and back in my retail days or things. And actually, they did mean something to me at the time for various reasons. But like, are they the best, or what are the best rewards for people, Daryl?
Well, I think all of those things are better than nothing, right? But what you want more than anything is to feel that you matter and that the work that you do is making a difference, making a contribution, and that you belong there, right? That's what you want more than anything. So, If you go back to the grill and the peaches, that whole scenario, right? The grill starts to sound like a gold watcher. It sounds very inauthentic, right? It just sounds like something that has to be checked off, right? And it doesn't actually mean anything. It's not connected to the purpose in any way, unless they're a charcoal manufacturer or something like that. But what would be more meaningful would be, you know, you really matter, and I'm going to go get these peaches, and I'm going to come back, and we're going to cook these peaches together on the grill, because it's all about the experience, right? And it's all about me recognizing you as an individual and elevating your identity, that you are making a difference and that you matter, not only to the organization and to everyone that you work with, but also to what we're trying to accomplish here, what we're trying to achieve, because this purpose matters. Mm-hmm. And this purpose matters, and then you matter more because you're part of it. So it's all about everybody, all of us, we focus first on us, right? It's all about me. Mm-hmm. And how does it make me feel? So anything that an organization can do to somehow elevate how I feel about myself and hopefully how other people feel about me, then that's where the real recognition and reward comes from.
So I totally agree with you. My question, though, in response, because I think that can be done well, and even that act can be done poorly. What is the secret sauce to having that authentic, actual appreciation? Like, I can only imagine in an enterprise organization with thousands of employees, hundreds of thousands of employees, and tens of thousands or thousands of leaders, frontline leaders, working with a myriad of employees. How do I find, amidst a multitude of potential hires, the people who can authentically deliver that message the right way? Because if I go, hey, Daryl, great job today, and I don't mean it, you see right through that, right? And that opportunity that you're saying is so important falls flat, and I become jaded now to what appears to be very inauthentic and meaningless reward, using the word we've used so far. So is the secret just hire good people? Is the secret a certain level of training? Is it reorienting of certain views that we need to push down the organization to the top? Like, talk to me through that, about that process.
Well, obviously it's a certain amount of all of those things, but I think that what we see is the most important thing is making sure that that purpose is clear and that that story is told almost obsessively, right? Like, here are all the things we're doing, and just really thinking things through. So we're seeing actually good progress in this, but so many companies, particularly large companies, they make enormous charitable contributions, but it's a little bit here and a little bit there. It's a drib and a drab, and nothing actually makes a difference because there's so many, and it's, yep, there's focus, right? So choose something and really connect it to your purpose in some way, and then say, our purpose can actually assist this thing, right? This charity, this endeavor, whatever it might be, and we're going to make a difference. And so we're going to focus on that. So maybe it's also Alzheimer's, right? Or maybe it's cancer, or could be anything, but could be education, could be whatever it is, but focus on something that you can actually make a difference with. And then beyond that, making sure that story is always clear in terms of how it translates to the everyday business activities. And then the real secret is actually making sure that someone in the organization is in charge of catching people in the right behaviors. And you catch people in the right behaviors. I'll give you an example. We just last year, or year before last, CEO called me and said, hey, this great resignation thing is driving me crazy. I'm losing key people. And our employee engagement scores are high. Everything's good. I don't know what to do. What's going on? Can you come in and check it all out? I think it might be they don't have an employee value proposition. They have an associate value proposition because they refer to everyone as associates. Mm-hmm. So we went in and we got into it. We did the interviews, the depth interviews to understand what was going on with their customers. We ran a rapid cultural assessment, which is a tool that we use that can help us really quickly understand where there may be problems or opportunities within a culture. And as it comes out, people really love this company. They love working there. They've got people, you know, in critical roles who've been there a long time. But their purpose was not aspirational enough. It was just too darn businessy, right? And it didn't have enough of a human thing in it. So, and this is another one of those healthcare companies where they're changing lives. The kind of work that they do, they change lives literally millions a day because of what they do, this kind of testing process that they do. Mm. And so they wanted it elevated, right? They wanted to feel like they were a part of, they wanted it expressed what they're a part of. And so we redid their purpose statement and we didn't change their values. We just sort of tweaked them. So they came into alignment better, and we created a new associate value proposition. And so she just told me, this is now like a year and a half later, and she just said that, one of the things that we really encourage is that you have a team that is identifying and capturing these stories and curating them and then sharing them. And they have a video team who tells the story really nicely. And so she said what she loves is that the highlight of every monthly town hall meeting now are these videos. Wow. And that it's changed all the language, all the vernacular, all the discussion within the organization. Everybody is focused and everybody wants, you know, sort of secretly in your heart, you want to be recognized. You want to be one of those people who gets caught in those behaviors. It's no more complicated than that. You know, there could be other rewards involved. There might not be anything wrong with that, but you know, don't cheapen it. Don't make something, tawdry out of it. What it is like, we're doing this thing and we're all in this together and you are a significant part of this. That's what people want more than anything.
They really do. That's so good. Well, Daryl, I won't keep you much longer. I have one question for you. One question to ask to finish things up. And that is, and maybe we've touched on it already, but you're curious to hear your thoughts. What is something that you believe? We're talking like a core belief here. Something that orients your life. That you believe, if everyone else believed too, would make the world a better place.
Human truth. Human truth has the power to change the world. But you have to be willing to accept that human truth is not, it's not going to jump out and grab you. You have to dig for it. You have to think about it. You have to really be thoughtful in the sense of, it's not so much what's happening here. It's not so much what seems rational. Like, you know, for so long we think, well, just give somebody a raise, just give them a promotion. And those things do matter, obviously, but ultimately that's not really what it's about. That's not what's motivating. It's like, if we were all rational, we would always buy the lowest price product. As far as we know, there's no leading brand in any category that is the low price brand in the category. We're buying for other reasons. We're buying for reasons. We're buying because of the way things make us feel. Right. And do we feel like we're a part of this organization? That sort of thing. So that's the human truth of it. What is the human truth that's actually motivating, inspiring people to behave the way we hope we would all behave?
Well, I can just envision a myriad of conversations that we could take from there and just explore personal relationships, marriages, kids, churches and communities and businesses, as we've already gone there. And perhaps we can explore any or all those things at a later date, but I'll let you go for now. But Daryl, I'm so grateful for you spending this time with this podcast today. You got a lot of things going on and incredible truth that you shared. And I appreciate it very much.
Likewise, my privilege. Thanks again for the invitation.
Well, human truth, if we could all commit ourselves to chasing that and looking at our deeper desires and understanding our motivations and why we actually do things, we probably would find a lot of secrets to greater happiness, success, and stronger communities and a better world around us. So it's a great message you brought today, Daryl. For those listening, I hope you feel similarly inspired. This has been another episode of the Frontline Industry Podcast, and we'll see you next time.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by Impact Tomorrow Today, helping you take the right steps today to make positive changes in your life tomorrow. What are the irrational things that you do in your life despite knowing that they aren't best for you, knowing that they won't get you what you ultimately want? How are your actions standing in the way of your success? If you want to take control of your life, continue growing and gain the skills to lead yourself and others, please subscribe so you don't miss any podcasts in the future. We've got lots around the corner and you won't want to miss it. See you soon.